Welcome back to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparable's only podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I'm Scott McNulty, joined, as always, by Mr. Jason Snell. Hello, Jason.
Scott, why are you so racked with anxiety?
Now, this show, I thought to myself, Captain Picard better recognize that voice or I'm going to throw my TV out the window.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily he did, so I did not have to throw my TV out the window.
He dodged a bullet there. I wondered why he decided to do a Sigmund Freud voice, but I like to think it's because Q is a rascal.
I think that that is 100% the reason. He is a rascal. Nobody knows who he is. He doesn't need to do it, but he's going to do it because it amuses him.
Yeah. Yeah, however he got into NASA's psychiatry. I mean, using his Q magic, I guess, which
I guess,
is limited, but apparently does exist or something. Mm-hmm.
And he's dying? Is he dying? I don't know. We don't know what's going on with Q.
I think something is going on, not to bring out the theories so early, but I think there is something going on that we have not yet been let in on involving Q and his limitations. And it may have something to do with Picard, right? Picard and Picard's ancestor, Rene Picard, after whom his brother might be named, because his brother was also Rene Picard with one E.
Well,
two E's, but not three E's. So,
records from the time are spotty, so we'll never be able to
We'll
tell.
Never know because of World War III. Nobody mentioned World War III. So that's my theory, is that maybe he's actually limited in what he can do, and that's why he's trying to get Brent Spiner as yet another Soong to cause trouble with the Picards, because maybe that's something that Q is prevented. Like he's engineered all of this, but he has limitations that might relate to Picard himself.
Yes, I think that might be the case, because it's all about interconnections. This season we've got Agnes and the Borg Queen, Picard and Q, Soong and causing trouble.
Yeah, well, the Soong and his daughter.
Oh, that's true. I did for a moment think, is that the same? Yeah, oh, it is.
He's a Prionis, and I saw some people complaining about it, and I thought, look, first off, it's Star Trek. Second off, this is a thing that we can take as a red thing in Star Trek, which is the Soongs are all Brent Spiner. So they all look kind of like Brent Spiner. Why would Soong's daughter not look like Data's daughter, right? Like, why would that not be the case? So, of course, it is the case. And that was an interesting subplot. Have we gotten into it? It's Fly Me to the Moon, Scott.
I was just about to say, Star Trek Picard, Season 2, Episode 5, Fly Me to the Moon.
Fly Me to the Moon.
Technically, they're flying to Mars, I think.
Right, but the song is
Fly Me to Europa. Europa is a moon of...
A moon. Fly Me to a moon.
Fly Me to a moon. There you go.
Yeah.
Directed by our good pal, Jonathan Frakes.
Little Johnny Frakes.
A cameo by the previous episode's director, Leah Thompson, is in here.
Yeah, just a little brief.
Those are my only fun facts about
this
episode.
She turns down Brent Spiner and is like, not only is your proposal bad, but you're being stripped of all your medical licenses and get out.
And your funding that we're not going to give you anyway.
Yeah,
get
out. You're a monster. But he's got a statue of himself in the alternate future, so that's obviously what is... What's going on here? Anyway, I think it was to get back to Issa Briones. I think it's interesting that she's she's not genetically altered. He's trying to genetically alter her because she has some sort of genetic disease. And I think it's an interesting sort of like Soong story arc of like how do you perfect humanity and do you go on from that? So you try to fix humanity, you try to augment humanity, and then ultimately you try to replace humanity with something better. And that's the story arc of the Soong family, apparently.
Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And so this episode's all about Picard. And this is kudos to you, Jason. I think, I don't know if it's confirmed, but it is mentioned. So I think we'll say it's confirmed that Laris, who is not Laris, is a supervisor a la Gary Seven.
Yeah. Well, Picard has that moment where he says, oh, you know, there's a record at Kirk's Enterprise meeting, something called a supervisor named... And he goes, what was the name? Gary. Gary Seven. And I thought to myself, okay, this is an alternate timeline, so she probably can't say, oh, Gary, right? Which I would have really liked to make that be like confirmation. I almost kind of wish Picard hadn't even mentioned it, right? Like, I almost kind of wish... It was, he put such a fine point on it. It was like a footnote on like Patrick Stewart turns to the camera and says, check out Memory Alpha, everybody.
That's true.
So I don't know. I think they, you know, there were records of this. Something that was a little less specific, I might have been, might have preferred. Or if she had done like a, like, Gary, kind of jokey kind of thing of like, yeah, she confirms that this is dumb old Gary. He was a classic. Mm-hmm. But yes, that is the implication here. I'm fascinated by that because this is a bit of old Trek lore dropped again for essentially the first time, and they kind of blow past it. I will have a conspiracy theory later in the podcast, but I won't blow it now because
we don't want
to. I think it's too likely to be right, and it comes from our friend David J. Lore. And I think he might be right. But I'll save that for later. But anyway, yes, the Gary 7 link is seemingly confirmed, and she's just an observer, a watcher, if you will. But she gets rounded up into Talon, I guess, and she gets rounded up into our La Serena crew, sort of against her will, because they're also trying to protect, as it turns out, Rene Picard, who is the almost certainly the divergence in the timeline. Mm-hmm. And this also explains why last episode Guinan reacted to him saying his name was Picard, right? Because she is aware of the famous Picard who's about to go on a mission, and that's probably what's going on here. It's a real Back to the Future kind of thing.
It's true. And so Picard and Talon or whatever, he convinces her that she needs to be more involved and help repair the timeline. And they go back to the ship. And the funniest line in the show, if you ask me, is for some reasons that we will explain in a moment, there's a unconscious French policeman being dragged out of the ship by the rest of the crew. And she says, this is your crew, the ones dragging the dead policeman out of the ship. And Picard says, I'm sure he's not dead.
Yeah, he's probably not dead. Then.
Probably not dead. I thought that was very funny.
But I'm sure there's an explanation. Yeah, no, that was good stuff. I guess we should explain what else happens before the La Serena crew gets together, because that all happens here. They after sort of bickering, Raffi and Seven electromagnetically pulse the bus
and get Rios out very
leads
quickly.
A jailbreak. He gets to beat the crap out of that guy. He and that one other guy out of the racist ICE agent, and they free everybody and escape.
One guy kind of looks like Elnor to remind us that Raffi is still dealing with her grief around Elnor, and it's not Elnor, it's some other guy.
It's just some other guy. Like, but it gives the guy who plays Elnor something to do in this episode, since they killed him off several episodes ago. So I guess that's good.
And he's fine. That leads me to believe that this is my conspiracy theory. They bothered with this, so Elnor's going to be fine, everybody.
I think he's going to be fine, yeah.
He's fine.
I don't think they killed him off for real. I think it's all time travel, right? So they get Rios off the bus, and that's fine. Again, I say I kind of feel like this is going to be a theme, which is like I kind of wish this had all happened in the last episode. I kind of wish that most or all of this episode was the last episode. Feels we're here in the middle of the season, and it feels a little slow paced and a little bit like these two episodes could have been one episode that was a little bit faster paced, but you know, so be it. They all get back to the ship too. And then the other big thing to talk about.
Before they get back to the ship, when they get back to the ship, there's a big reveal, but we will get to that. The Borg Queen has learned how to call people.
Yeah. She calls the police. She fakes a bunch of voices until she gets to Rios's voice, and then the computer, which is a very Starfleet, I guess, or it's fake Starfleet. It's like the Confederation just accepts a Rios voice print as it's legit. Fine. It's like but it was a Borg Queen who said it. You should be smarter than that. But no, it's not. It's bad.
It's fine.
So she calls. She calls the cops.
She calls the police, and they come to check it out. And she keeps the French policeman who smokes a cigarette before he gets on the ship, of course, hostage until Agnes gets back, and basically says it's you or him, Agnes. And Agnes says, I choose neither, and shoots the Borg Queen with a shotgun that I guess was loaded and been on the wall of
She might have found the ammunition in a drawer or something, but yeah, a historic shotgun on the wall at Chateau Picard since World War II, and yet she managed to load it. And yeah, it's fine. I'm sure
it is fine.
It seems unsafe, but they left in a hurry.
They did. This is leading up to the moment at the end of the episode, because now, if you haven't, I guess I should say, if you haven't seen this episode of Star Trek Picard,
what are you doing?
Why are you listening to this? So this leads us to believe that she has killed the Borg Queen. And in fact, she says that she has killed the Borg Queen, but she skips over a part when telling her crewmates what had happened, which is the big reveal at the end of the episode where, you know, if you're going to kill a Borg Queen, which, you know, I would argue you probably should.
Well, I should,
if you get the chance to kill a Borg Queen. Don't approach the Borg Queen while she is giving her final soliloquy, because the Borg Queen could then, you know, if you get too close, she might assimilate you.
She might put some nanites on your face and transfer some. It's unclear to me, like, because we see then later that there's like a phantom. It's like Six in Battlestar Galactica. It's like her head Borg Queen is sitting there next to her, Agnes's friend, the Borg Queen.
I guess.
And does the ghost Borg Queen have legs? I don't know.
We haven't seen.
I think the open question is like, is it all of the Borg Queen, or is it more like the Borg Queen has bestowed Borg Queen-ness on Agnes, where she's now been kind of like transferred all of the Borg Queen stuff.
The Borg Queen coronation.
Yeah, I don't. The royal jelly of I don't know what's going on there. They're not quite bees, but still they have a hive. So it's unclear, you know, and obviously it'll get cleared up down the road. But clearly something bad is going on where Agnes is not just herself, but she is also the Borg Queen, which I think you could have probably seen some version of this coming. But it was an interesting reveal that the Borg Queen is dead, but it turns out that, you know, that she's only mostly dead because she's also inside Agnes's head.
The Borg Queen is dead. Long live the Borg Queen.
Turns out, yeah.
And then so they are, they do that. They have to infiltrate a party that has better security than anything we have ever seen before in Star Trek, I feel like. We haven't seen if they thwart it yet because they have captured Agnes, and that's when we see her and her Borg Queen ghost.
Right, because the plan was actually for her to get into the computer room, which she does as she's held, you know, by the security. They don't like take her down to a cell or throw her out. They take her right by where all the computers are, which was the plan all along. Ha ha!
Tricks on you.
Yeah.
And we'll see that. Yeah, she's supposed to hack the computers and put their IDs in the database so that they can come to the party, and I guess make sure nobody messes with Renee.
Yeah,
and
cheer up Renee Picard. meanwhile, in the other storyline, at a restaurant, Q convinces Dr. Soong to that he needs his help. He'll save his daughter from her genetic condition, but the price is basically I need you to take care of a Picard. I assume Renee, because he's already been messing with Renee, and he wants so that's going to be where we end up, is that Soong is going to try to do something to Renee Picard, and they are trying to it's a time travel story, right? In the end, she's a historic figure who's going to have people from the future trying to save her from other people who are trying to harm her. That's where we're going with this, which I think is good. We only meet her briefly.
Contact.
Yeah. Exactly. We only meet her briefly, but she seems nice. She's grappled with depression to a certain extent, but now, unfortunately, she has an unlicensed therapist who is putting doubts into her head right before she's supposed to launch on her mission to Europa.
Oh, no. Yeah, so they at the beginning of the episode, they show her kind of in an emergency situation on a spacecraft.
She's training, right? It's a simulator.
It's clear that it's a simulator. And she dies at the end. Well, simulated death.
I as somebody who's watched a lot of shows about NASA kind of space stuff, of course it's a simulator run. Of course it is. But still, they do it. And the idea there, I don't know why she doesn't have any of her crewmates with her on that, but maybe it's just that, you know, she's tougher than they are, and it's been working. They're all asleep, and she's still pushing herself or something.
I think the That's how I read the situation, though. Yeah. She's put herself through it, and she's just keep going and going until she's perfect.
Yeah, and it's then she should really let it go. So she's apparently brilliant. We hear that she was, you know, we get a little detail of her biography that she's mm-hmm. she ended up going through, you know, being a test pilot, and then NASA wanted her immediately, and now she's going to lead this mission. So she's brilliant, but she's flawed, and they're trying to take advantage of her flaws in order to change the timeline. And that's what our crew is now kind of clear that they need to deal with.
Oh yes, and Captain Picard, or Admiral Picard, shares an interesting tidbit that I'm sure is going to come up again, that the only thing from historical record that he knows about her is that she went to Europa, found a microbe that she thought was sentient, and convinced the mission planners to allow her to bring it back to Earth.
On Io, actually, a different moon.
Oh, that's right.
Of mm-hmm. Jupiter. But that's that's the only tidbit. And is that the thing that that changes history? I don't know.
I don't know.
We don't know what it is. That's part of what they're keeping us in the dark about, mm-hmm. is exactly what is supposed to happen here.
And that's really all that happens in this episode, I think. Is there anything else that we...
Yeah, I mean, the Laris's, or sorry, Talon's lair is very mid-century modern-y, Gary Seven-like mm-hmm. in some ways, which I thought was a fun thing. And I think her mm-hmm. transporter is in a bank vault, so that's a pickup from Assignment Earth. I loved the stuff with Agnes and the Borg Queen. I thought that was really...
Oh, yeah. Really good.
Intense, and they have a good rapport, and those are two very good actresses, and Allison Pill is so good, and mm-hmm. I think we're very lucky to have her in a Star Trek show. It's very good. But yeah, I would say the same thing that I said last week, which is and what I said earlier, which is I kind of wish in the end that these two episodes had sort of been streamlined into one episode, because it just feels like these last two episodes have slowed down. They're not bad, but they seem less substantial than the first three episodes. And this episode's also very short in terms of its runtime. So
it is.
They you know, I don't know. They ordered 10 episodes, and then they plotted it out. And
they're going to get 10 episodes.
At this point, they're like, we'll stretch for these two. And it does feel a little bit like a stretch. Like Rios, you know, Rios gets put on the bus so that they can just take him back off the bus.
He's not on the bus very long.
It's not hard. I also think it's funny, just a California thing. They're like out in the middle of the desert or something. It's like, I mean, I guess... Like, they're supposed to take him to the border. Well, you'd have to drive through all of downtown Los Angeles to get to the border. So are they taking him out through, like, Lancaster and Palmdale? Maybe they are. That's a really weird way to go to the border, to take him out into the desert and then down, like, I-15 or something like that. Anyway, as a Californian, I got very confused by some of the geography going on there. But they did. Obviously, it was shot by the Grapevine, which is actually just up from Castaic, and I think Santa Clarita is where they shoot the show, so they didn't have to go very far from home in order to shoot the exteriors of this. And that's a place that they go to for all sorts of TV shows that are shot in LA shoot in the kind of country roads around just north of Castaic. In fact, it's basically the same place that's in Serenity, the Firefly movie. There's a bunch of stuff in that same location. It's every time we drive to and from LA, I get to a particular exit. I think it's the Templin Highway exit on I-5, and I go, Serenity. And now I'll go and Star Trek Picard also.
Oh, there you go.
Right down there. Let's stop a bus. Let's halt that bus. Are there punks on this bus? No.
No.
No punks are on this bus. Anyway, that's my California geography corner. I hope you enjoyed it.
I did. And I feel like what we said before about Discovery, or really what you said before, I don't want to steal your idea, that they plot it out and they have certain things that they know want to happen in certain episodes. And then once they realize, well, there's not enough plot really, let's just fill it with other stuff. I think they had good endings for both this episode and the last episode. Mm-hmm. So the reveal of Q can't just snap his fingers and make Rene Picard depressed, and Agnes and the Borg Queen, something's going on there.
Right.
Those are good reveals at the end, but then, you know, kind of how they get between those two and if they have enough to make a full episode around it is another question.
Right.
I mean, they have them, but
the story is a little scanty. Yeah. If you think about it, And anybody out there who's written like a novel or something or a screenplay knows this too. If you think about it, you know, you're doing your outline and you've got all the beats that you want to hit for the season and you know how it's going to end. That's good. Like, you want to tell your story. You want to know how it ends before you start. Otherwise, things can get really bad. So you know how it ends. You know how it starts. And then you try to break up like, okay, how do we got 10 episodes. How do we get from point A to point B? And sometimes you can work out like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and you're like, oh, that's solid. And 1, 2, 3 getting us into this world, well, that's solid. We know how we're going to introduce the time travel thing, and there's going to be the one episode in our reality and then the alternate reality, and then they're going to do the time travel thing and be on Earth and figure that out. And whatever happens at the end of the season, they're going to be like, oh, surely it's going to build to a crescendo, and there's very dramatic stuff. And then you've got the kind of muddled middle where you're just sort of like, and then we need to get everybody from the exciting we're back on Earth in the past to the points that are key to the climax of the season. And, you know, and you come up with a couple of bullet points and you're like, all right, we can hang an episode on there. And then somebody gets assigned to write that episode and they're like, how long does this have to be? Right. And so they insert some stuff about, you know, whatever. I wonder sometimes if the whole Rios getting captured and all of that was actually kind of part of the extension of the season a little bit, because it was feeling a little bit slack. It's fine. I am really enjoying Star Trek Picard. I just think it's funny. Since we are talking about it on a podcast, I want to apply a little more level of criticality to it than I might otherwise do, and just say that this episode, like the last one, was a little slower paced, and I hope they pick up the pace soon, because the first three episodes were dynamite. The last two have been fine, but I want to keep going, because I think they're on a great path, and I can't wait to see what's next. And I actually think that, yeah, I think the setup at the end of this episode felt like we're entering the next act of the story, because it is very much like, well, now we know this is about Rene Picard and her mission to Europa. This is about Soong and his mission from Q, who, like, by the way, in that scene in the restaurant, why doesn't he just say, I'm the devil, Soong? Because he does like your typical like, what if I were to tell you? It's like, okay, you know, all right, I guess you wanted this guy to sell his soul to you. So anyway, that is all set up now. We've got the whole, like, what we know more about what the divergence is, or at least who the divergence is. We've got our good people and our bad people. We've got our, like, very weird subplot with Agnes and the Borg Queen, like, friend or foe. I think the Borg Queen probably wants the timeline to be changed, but she's really also an agent of chaos. Like, everything is really kind of set up for the next segment of this season. So I'm looking forward to that. It's just that, you know, it was a couple episodes where there was a lot of setup going on.
Yes. And there are only 5 episodes left, so...
we're halfway through.
That's right. This is the midpoint in the season. I will say I did enjoy that scene with Brent Spiner and John Delancey in the restaurant. I enjoy Q. Q is he likes to be dramatic. That Q. I liked how he was, you know, whatever. He's the evolution of stardust, the flutter of a butterfly's wing.
Oh, yeah, that was good. Yeah,
and a fan of yours.
Even in a show that is serious, like Star Trek Picard is a lot of the time, you still have Q kind of hamming it up. Like, at least, like, why does he do the German accent as the therapist? Why does he do the, you know, I am the devil when he's talking to Soong? And I think the answer is, have you seen Q? This is what he does. Why is he a flower delivery man for Jean-Luc Picard? Why is he like, why does he make a mariachi band appear on the Enterprise? It's Q. This is what he does. Even in this serious story, there's that he's going to still ham it up. That's just who he is.
Mm-hmm. He cannot help his nature.
No.
I like to think that he's just bored. He knows everything. He is all powerful.
Yeah.
I guess he doesn't know everything. He knows a lot.
Yeah.
And he's all powerful. And he just he's bored.
Yeah, and I think there are some rules that he follows, but he always wants to keep it fun, right?
Keep exactly. Keep it light, everybody. Yeah. We're just, you know, changing a culture's a civilization's future.
But fun.
I guess the universe's future.
Yeah, really. But fun, though. That's the most important
thing. In a
fun
way.
Exactly. It's like, you know, nobody else really appreciates that I'm doing my Sigmund Freud here. But
Picard will see this and he will appreciate this.
Picard and his watcher friend will see the tape and they will think, ha, hilarious. So
I did think, Adam Soong, that little vial of cure is not going to be a permanent cure. So don't let your daughter like frolic in the sun for too long.
Well, I like how he has that moment where he says, all right, if you can save her, then you own me.
Yeah,
I thought that was really good. Like, and mm-hmm. Brent Spiner, I mean, I guess we should say Brent Spiner, a whole career of playing Soongs, but and the, here's the next, last season was one, this is another one, but like, another. Why not?
He's good at it.
And he's good. Yeah, yeah, he is good.
Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. I think this episode was fine. I think the ending was really good. I like Q, so, you know, I like Picard. I like all the characters.
I like it's you great. Too, Scott. Oh, you meant Q. Oh, fine.
I like you as well, okay. Jason.
I do like Q. I don't love all the episodes with Q, but the good ones are good, and this season, it's good Q stuff. This is all good Q stuff.
And I think that's all she wrote. So we're going to fire off the conspiracy phaser.
Conspiracy phaser, yeah, just for a little bit of
conspiracy quarter.
Yep.
Closets. So this time I resisted looking at the incomparable Slack thread about this episode. I saw the first message. Someone said, you know, it was worth it for the reveal. And I thought, well, I won't read anymore because I don't want to know what the reveal is.
Right.
So I don't know what this might be.
So the conspiracy theory that I'm going to send, and again, David Lohr said this, and the moment he said it, I went, oh. And again, just skip forward a couple of minutes if you don't want to hear this, but I think he might be right, or at least is on to something, which is, why does Talon look like Laris, right? And David says, who's to say that the Watchers are not watching, among their critical figures in the history of humanity, are not watching Jean-Luc Picard? And who is to say that perhaps even Laris is actually watching Jean-Luc Picard?
Ooh.
And I thought, I don't know. I mean, because like Talon is like, no, we can't be seen. But it's, you know, it's a few centuries later. Maybe they've changed their tune or something. But I just had that moment where I thought, oh, like that's one of those things that you think is not connected to the bigger story, but maybe it is. And maybe the explanation for why Laris... why Orla Brady is playing both parts is actually a tell that that Picard is being watched, that Picard is important, and that this is actually all about sort of not just Rene Picard, but about Jean-Luc Picard's key, connection to the future of humanity in his time. And I just, again, I don't know exactly if it all tracks, but I like it as an idea that maybe what the show is going to do is sort of echo what's going on with Rene Picard with Jean-Luc himself. And that's part of what's going on here, along with that theory that I mentioned earlier, which is that I think that Q's inability to affect things is probably related. We don't know anything, and who knows if we'll learn about who these people are, who are the guardian angels, but it does feel a little bit like they're kind of counter to Q. And they're like, they're fighting against the shenanigans of people like Q. And maybe that's why Q can't affect her directly, is that she's under their jurisdiction. So that's all, you know, again, theory, guesswork. But I think it could just be a cute, you know, Gary Seven reference. But what if there's more to it than that? And that explains a lot about what's going on with Q and about the fact that these Picards have a destiny of some sort. I don't know. I guess we'll see. We got five more episodes, so we're only halfway through.
They could be watching Picard because he is destined to stop this change in the timeline, and he's the only person that can fix it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe so. I don't know. But that all gets revealed when they go back to the present day. That
and there's a giant statue of Picard.
While we're in the conspiracy phaser zone, I will also mention another theory that's been thrown out for a while, which I'm increasingly convinced is true, which is when the Borg Queen, who's masked, says, look up to Picard right before they blow up the ship and get sent back in time for Q because they did the wrong thing. I am increasingly of the belief that it's Agnes.
Yes.
That the Borg Queen is Agnes, and now she's been injected with this, and like this is part of it, and that she's got all the information about Picard and his history, and she knows about Picard's childhood and his mom, and so that's why the Borg Queen in that moment is able to tell Picard something from his past and from his childhood, is that it's actually Agnes or a version of Agnes. Now, how that works temporally, I don't know, but I'm just saying, well, I think that maybe that's it. Because obviously you don't cover up the face of the Borg Queen if it isn't somebody you'd recognize.
Right. Well, and they do establish, right, this whole point of the Borg Queen in this series is that she is connected to all these other Borg Queens throughout time somehow.
Right.
And so I wonder if it is not, in fact, a version of Agnes on
right.
the bridge, which I think it might be. I am 100% certain that if it is not that, Agnes has used the Borg Queen time network to send that message to Picard at that time.
Right. That's true. Right. It is Agnes is using the Borg Queen perception to feed that Borg Queen, you know, what she needs to do at the right time, and that Picard looking up will change the, you know, change the outcome of it, and that's all, you know, that's all of what is going on here. I don't see all the pieces, and that's good. Like, if you're going to do a magic trick, you got to put the pieces there, but you can't give it all away by episode five. But but there's a lot going on there that it's all fascinating. So those are my theories about that. Before we go, should we talk about the many Strange New World promos that happened this week?
We should. So, Strange New Worlds, in case you aren't on Twitter, I guess I should say, if you are listening to this and don't know what Strange New Worlds is, I will tell you it is the
new Star Trek show.
New Star Trek show set on the Enterprise. Captain Pike, they built the sets. They're making the show.
They apparently rebuilt some of the sets, but that's okay. As long as they approved it, that's the important part.
They're going to keep building those sets, darn it. And they are doing something. Now, this marketing scheme of theirs makes me feel good about this show. I was feeling good about it before, but yeah. I feel like this proves to me that they get what makes good Star Trek, which is, to me, the crew and the characters. And so they are introducing them with these little 30-second videos going through the new crew members and kind of, you know, like a sizzle reel, as they say in the biz. I don't know if they say that in the biz.
Sure.
And it's great. I've been enjoying it mightily, watching these little 30-second clips of the show and getting more and more excited.
Yeah, as of this recording, they've released five of these. And they give you little glimpses of scenes, but also which are all actually really intriguing. And then also you're meeting these characters. So it's three characters from canon. And I guess it's six, because it's three characters from canon and three characters that are new characters, you know, although one of them touches canon a little bit. So there's a Uhura trailer where, you know, she's a cadet and then has just been brought on board, and Pike says something about how, like, you know, only the really talented cadets get to do this. So he's very impressed, and he says, I heard you spoke 12 languages, and she says like 27 actually. And it's like, oh, okay, sorry. And she's got the little thing in her ear, like it's like a modern take on the little Uhura earpiece thing. And so that's good. There's La'an Noonien Singh, who is the security chief, and so you get to learn a little bit more about her kind of like demeanor, which is kind of interesting, and she's a, you know, she's a woman of action. I believe she also, in the scene in the Uhura clip, says the universal translators aren't working. Uhura, you're up. And Uhura's like, that's not how translating works.
That's not how linguistics work. Yes.
So that's good. There's Ortegas, who is the pilot. She's basically the Sulu of this ship, and there's Pike is like, hey, remember when I told you had the potential to be the best pilot in Starfleet? She's like, yeah. He says, do that now. Like, okay. But that's kind of fun. Just definitely, you know, she's got a lot of personality. There is Hemmer, who is an Anar. So he's a blind, and the actor, I believe, is blind. A blind telepathic Andorian from that Enterprise episode about the offshoot blind telepathic Andorians. And he is the engineer on the USS Enterprise. It's kind of awesome. And he apparently is a genius.
Yes, as he tells us. And he can catch carrots.
Carrots thrown at him from behind, because he's kind of like Daredevil, for those who know about that. Throw a carrot at him. And then Mbenga, who is the doctor, who we know from TOS as well. And so we get to meet him, and he's kind of... That clip is sort of like he speaks with kind of a gruff voice and he says, "I'm a doctor," which, you know, that's his job. And then there's Christine Chapel, who is also in the show.
Good old Nurse Chapel.
And so, you know, there's I keep with Bega and Chapel, I have a lot of like questions about how they're going to fit this in canon. Is Christine Chapel going to talk a lot about how, while she's very attracted to this mysterious Mr. Spock and they have scenes together in that trailer, that is she going to talk about, "Oh, but you know, I'm engaged, Roger Corby, you know, we're going to be married later," and everybody can be like, "Oh, that's not going to work out. He's going to die and turn into an android." I don't know how they're going to take care of all that kind of canonical stuff, but that'll be part of the fun, I think. And I do like taking these, especially Uhura is obviously one of the major characters, although you could argue didn't get a lot of love in the show. Yeah. But Mbenga and Chapel are so fun because, like Pike, they're characters from Star Trek canon who don't have a lot around them. And so they're going to be able to kind of, take them and take those characters out for a spin and have them do interesting stuff that'll be kind of informative without presumably wrecking the canon too. So yeah, I'm excited.
I'm very excited, and it all looks beautiful, and it's a lot of fun.
There's Jeffrey's tube, the chapel climbs up, which is pretty good, and the sick bay looks kind of like Discovery like, but also kind of like TOS in a fun way, and the engineering similarly is like there's definitely a Discovery aesthetic because this is shot in Toronto. It's I think a lot of the same people who work on Discovery, but that they've tried to, you know, honor a lot of like they put the orange in the bridge of the Enterprise. There's like shapes from the old engine room that are in the new engine room, so they're like trying to do their 21st century riff on all this TOS stuff. It's a lot of fun.
And that is what, April 5th it starts,
May 5th.
April 5th.
April 5th is next week.
Next
week. We have so many weeks that we would be exhausted. But no, in fact, the crossover is I think we only have like 1 or 2 weeks where we're doing 2 episodes again, which is too many weeks, but so be it.
Only one.
The premiere is the same week as the Picard episode 10. So fortunately, we only have that one really exciting week where we'll have to
the double header.
We'll do a double header. It's like it'll be baseball season by then. Let's play two. That's what they say in baseball.
Death to the opposition.